Conference record has joined the conference.
Hey, Melvin, you still with me?
I'm here.
Great, excellent. Thanks so much for your patience. So I'm just going to go ahead and give an introduction, and then we can start our conversation. This is Dylan Mulberg of Grateful Web here with legendary organ and piano man Melvin Seals. Melvin has been a strong presence in American rock and soul for well over 30 years. He was tapped by Jerry Garcia to join his band in 1980 and remained a member for the remainder of the band's 14-year tenure. We are so thrilled to have you join us today, Melvin. I wanted to start our conversation by talking about your early days of learning to play piano. As I understand it, you learned to play piano in a church setting?
That is correct. My father was a musician and the choir director, and, you know, he was one of the pianists in the church, and there was a piano in the house. So, you know, when we come home from church, I just would sit around and try and play what I heard in church, and so it started making a little bit of sense, you know. So we kind of started learning how to play by ear, you know, just natural.
Absolutely. And as you developed your style as a teenager, growing up in the Bay Area in the 1960s, what sorts of music were inspiring you? What were you listening to?
Well, I was so diverse, just so many styles of music. I mean, I was listening to, Jimmy Smith, Billy Preston, Doobie Brothers. I mean, I was listening to soul, R&B, gospel, jazz. I was listening to a lot of styles of music. And from time to time got involved with certain things that was a certain style. For instance, I did six Broadway plays in San Francisco. And one of the bigger ones was Evolution of the Blues with John Hendricks. John Hendricks from Leander Kenneth and Ross.
Okay.
And so for a while, I'm doing theater and kind of jazz and blues from that play. Being in it so long, I was in it 6 years, that's kind of what I was doing, you know. And then I get into another environment, and then it took on the environment of whatever I was doing at the time. But I listened to so many styles of music that I was not captured into just one style.
Absolutely. And would you, what you were just speaking about, your experience in Broadway, was that your break into performing as a career, or what jump-started your professional career?
Well, I guess the Broadway stuff was the jump start. I had done some things with a couple bands. You know, when you get out of school, you're in a garage band, you know, someone's got a band, and we rehearsed every Saturday in the garage, and may not ever do a gig, but the band sounds great, you know. I did a number of those, but I did work with a guy called Gideon in Power, and he had a record deal with Bell Record way back at the time. And actually, his manager back in the time was Wally Amos. And this is, he went on to be famous Amos for the cookie. But before he became famous with that cookie, he was a promoter and an agent. And so he was agent of this guy, Gideon Power. So I remember that was my first gig. We flew to Albuquerque. I thought I'd made the big time. You know, here this guy bought my airline ticket. We flew in, did one date, and went home. Like that was, I was in a big time at that point. So that was the beginning. And then after that, I came to Broadway plays, the six of them, and took probably the 10 years of my life doing those. And from that, I met Elvin Bishop. He came down to one of the shows. And I was towards the end of Evolution of the Blues, and Elvin Bishop came down and saw me and heard me and kind of wanted me to go do a record with him. And I got with him for 6 years, and from him kind of moved into Miriam O'Dower and then Jerry Garcia. So I would say that Broadway plays were the first professional things that I was doing. Besides recording, I was in recording studios, but performing out live, that was the first thing.
Fabulous. And honestly, Melvin, I wasn't familiar with your background in theater or any of that, so it's great to hear about your origins and roots and meeting eventually Garcia through Elvin Bishop and Maria Muldaur. When you met Garcia, how familiar were you with the Grateful Dead or his solo career previous?
I wasn't familiar with it much at all. The only little bit I knew, Merle Saunders was really a good friend of mine. And Merle was playing with Jerry, but I didn't know really who Jerry was, but I knew he was with Jerry when I was with Elvin. So we would compare, you know, how he was being treated to how I was being treated, you know, and this kind of thing from a brother to a brother, you know, working with a different type of a band. I didn't know who Jerry was, didn't know nothing about the music. I just knew the name Grateful Dead because living in the Bay Area, you know, whenever one of those guys would have a birthday, for Institute here, Mickey Hart celebrates such and such birthday today, it'd be on the local news. And then,
sure.
And then also they would always do, I think, New Year's in Oakland at the Coliseum. And there would be news about that because there would be, you know, people would come in town and clout out the city and you hear people didn't want them there. So, you know, I knew the name Grateful Dead coming up in that area, but I knew nothing about the music. I couldn't point up about if I was standing in front of a band member, I couldn't tell you who they were. Yeah. So I knew really nothing about Jerry and who he was when I was standing in front of him. Still didn't know who he was.
And it's incredible knowing that, discovering your musical and personal kindredship and how your band with him gave him an outlet to play the music that both you and he wanted. Do you think that being Bay Area bred gave you guys that sort of musical empathy and maybe that initial background?
Well, Jerry, what I brought to the table with Jerry from what people tell me, I mean, you know, when you have a style, you just have a style, and I really don't pay much attention to it. But I brought, I guess, a little bit of a R&B gospelist soul feel to the band that evidently he didn't have that. I don't know if he even was he looking for it. I don't know. But that's just kind of the realm where I was living in, you know, a little bit of gospel, soul, R&B, you know. And so when I got with him, I brought the way I play to the table, of course, and they liked where that went. And Jerry did a lot of Motown songs, Second That Emotion, How Sweet It Is to Be Loved By You, and gosh, I can't name a lot, but Shining Star. He did a lot of Motown songs.
Yeah, absolutely. And
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it was a great bridge between the music he did with Merle Saunders and then continuing that, sustaining that R&B and gospel sound with you that he didn't get to do as much with the Grateful Dead. That was something that I definitely noticed.
Yeah, well, he really seemed to really like that a lot when we came to the table. He was pretty happy with the band from that point on. I understand up until then it was a revolving door, you know. When I joined the band, I was there to the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And between yourself and John Kahn as his longest-standing collaborators, it seems that once not only yourself fell into the groove with the longtime tenor with Garcia, that David Kemper and Jacqueline LeBranche and Gloria Jones was such a tight musical unit, performing for well over a decade together. What about this particular collective was built to last?
Excuse me, come again with that one again?
With the final Jerry Garcia band, that is with David Kemper, Jacqueline LeBranche, and Gloria Jones, what you fell into a groove with, in my opinion, in many's opinion, the tightest Garcia band that ever existed. And I was just asking, what was so successful about this particular collaboration?
Well, Jerry wanted some background singers, and we had three other teens, or two other females, before Jackie and Gloria came to the table. And they didn't work out quite like I think they wanted to. So when Jerry came to me and said, you know, Melvin, you you're from the church. You got to know singers. And I said, well, I do. He wanted me to find us some singers. So really, before Jackie and Gloria, it was Dee Dee Dickerson and another lady. I can't even call her name so long ago. Some may not recognize because they only did one tour, and it didn't work out, and I got rid of them right away because I knew that Jerry was depending on me, and I wasn't going to let him down anything less than what it could be. But the problem I had is that most singers, like myself, didn't get it. And so to get someone to come off their job to join this band, no one wanted to do it. I knew lots of singers. And I said, well, come on, let's join this band, and you'll be making good money. And, oh, no, oh, wait. They would always tell me, well, maybe I could take some vacation time. And no, it's not like that. You've got to commit. And they just didn't get it because they didn't know, like I didn't know, what it was all about. So my problem was getting someone to commit. It wasn't that I didn't know plenty of singers. And so when I had the first set, they didn't work out. I was in the midst of doing some recording with Gloria Jones. And so it was Gloria and another singer at one time, and the other singer didn't work out, and that's when I got Jackie. So when I finally got Gloria and Jackie, and they got it really quick after a couple dates, saw what was going on, did their homework, they wanted to be a part of it, and it just so happened that they worked out very well. And again, they came from straight out of church. They had done, Jackie had never sung in a band in her life. She sung in choirs. Same thing with Gloria. Never sung in a band in her life. They came straight out of the church. So it was the purity of that vocal that just knew that gospel sound. That, again, a portion of what I brought to the table made it so strong.
Yeah, it's so pure and apparent how effortless that the collective of that Garcia band was, and we can hear it in the recordings and with the legacy and the music. When I listen to Garcia band, there's an endless variety of songs and styles covered. Bob Dylan, Van Morrison, Jimmy Cliff. Did you feel at home musically with Jerry's selections, or was there a learning curve?
That was a learning curve for me. I didn't understand the music. I didn't understand the music at all. I just didn't. I didn't understand, and I didn't understand their approach to music. And what I mean by that is that come from the R&B world, you dot your I's and cross your T's. And what I mean by that, a certain amount of bars, you got this accent that's going to come, and you're going to do like for instance, maybe second emotion, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's an accent there. And so everyone gets it together as tight as it possibly can in the R&B and soul and gospel world. We thrive on making that stuff tight. Well, when I got with Jerry, it was the opposite. It was not tight at all. And they didn't seem to care about trying to make it tight. And I couldn't figure that out. These great musicians, and this stuff sometimes was so sloppy. But what I had to learn, it wasn't about the tightening, it was about the vibe and the feel that came across the song and what came out of the song. It wasn't about how tight and polished you made it. It was about the vibe of, and every night it was different. It could be totally different. So I had learned that this style of music doesn't have to be tight. After all my life working on, making things very tight, I listened to this and I just didn't get it. So I had to learn what jam band music was all about because I had never done it. And that was a learning curve for me.
And whether you realize it or not, Melvin, you are incredibly influential and instrumental in bringing that gospel and R&B element into what is now known as jam band and further influence that, so your contributions went on to further the movement as well. Anyways, moving on, you call the post-Garcia band the Keepers of the Flame. Much of your musical efforts since the passing of Jerry Garcia in 1995 have gone toward preserving the music you played with him Why do people still want to experience the feeling of seeing this music performed nearly 20 years after Jerry's passing?
Well, I feel my personal opinion that people like to go back in time, happy time, and clearly when Jerry was alive and we were performing, wherever people was in that particular space of life, they was enjoying themselves. You know, you had people out there spinning and just dancing and doing whatever they did to Garcia's music and the Grateful Dead. They liked what they were doing, and they wanted to go back in time. So I see now when I play, I see some of the older, not a whole lot of the older, because I think it's their kids that come out now. There's some of the deadheads back then, it's their children that heard the music all their life growing up in the house. I see them more out in the audience than, you know, because as you get older, you have problems, you don't get around so good. And, you know, those are not the ticket buyer, per se, as much as a younger generation. But they know all the songs. I'm sitting here watching someone that's 17, 18, 19 to 25-year-old. Some of them never even saw Jerry. Most of them never even saw Jerry. They're singing the words to every song. And so, you know, I'm assuming that is the children of the you know, generation that was there when I was with Jerry. But I find still people just like to go back to a happy time. I've seen judges in their profession, you know, suit and tie, and they come out to the show and they got a tie-dye on. And they're dancing, and they look like you would not know that they're a judge. The same thing, a doctor and a lawyer. You would not know this. When they come there, they put on a tie-dye or a Jerry T-shirt, and they went back to that which they love so much. I think about when I hear an oldie but goodie song, what was I doing back then when that was on the radio? And it's a fun time for me to go back and I hear something, man, I had this girlfriend and I was doing this and I was on top of the world and it was great. That's the music for them. They go back to, you know, whatever the time, what was going on. They just love to do that. I think with all the music, with the Grateful Dead and the other ones and, you know, Further, it's the same thing. They just want to go back and hear those songs again. And not even so much performed by the original people, because there's Grateful Dead bands, I think, in every city and every town there's a cover band.
Sure.
And people will pay to see those bands play the same song. Over and over and over and over. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. Melvin, I'm 25 years old, and, you know, you hit the nail on the head about the children of deadheads, and just really there's so much life to the music that it doesn't matter that I never saw you with Garcia or I never saw the Grateful Dead as the Grateful Dead. I still have that connection. So I want to speak about your JGB band, though it has been obviously a rotation of players over the years. For a while, you had a common collaborator with Stu Allen, a dead aficionado and a great guitar player. In the past few years, Allen retired from full-time touring to be a dad and was replaced by David Herbert. Is that how you, I think that's how you say his name.
Yes.
Great. And has playing the music of the Garcia band changed or evolved with this personnel switch?
It has definitely evolved. We've gone further than we were with Stu. Not to say that we wouldn't have gone there with Stu, but we've now pretty much selling out a lot of our houses where we wasn't quite with Stu. We were in the building stages. We've gone now, done to a Hawaii tour, done a couple cruises. We're doing much bigger things. For instance, we just performed at the new Capitol Theater in New York. Well, when we were still, we were pretty much just clubs. It was just pretty much local clubs and places like that. But now we're getting more into the theaters and a bigger prestige club. So the band has definitely gone up 4 or 5 notches. But again, I'm not going to say that it wouldn't have went there with Stu, but it certainly went there with A-Bear. The switchover just caused a shakeup and a I can't even say how it happened, but it definitely... It needed to happen, and we've gone gone much further with Adria than we were with Stu. But, you know, Stu spent about 9 years with me in building when he first came to the Varsity Band, or the, you know, the JTV. He was nowhere near where he winded up. And I must say he did his homework and became quite the player. The same thing with Dave. When Dave first got with it, he had to do the homework to go deeper into Garcia, not just tread water. You had to listen to this, listen to what he's really doing. And let's get that small substance that everybody seems to look over. For instance, everybody likes to get, you know, some of his runs and some of his things that he did on the guitar, but Jerry played excellent rhythm. While I was soloing, he was able to comp rhythm. So some of the guys work so hard on trying to get a lick or two, they forget all about he can play rhythm, and most of these guys can't play rhythm. They can't sit back and do what Jerry did when he's not soloing. So, sure. You know, when you really listen to him, it's not about just trying to get a couple of those solo licks that he did that everyone could signature licks that everyone liked. It's further than that. Other things that he did, you know, that Stu has picked up and Dave has now picked up, and they've gone in that zone where they're just the best of the best.
Yeah, I
do think we moved on since Stu. Unfortunately, he had a child and had become a full-time parent, you know, and just wouldn't work with him and his wife on the road, so that changed his life for a while now.
Sure, and any initial skepticism about the personnel switch in my vast circle of Garcia Band and Dead Loving Friends was totally shattered with Dave's. He's just a fantastic player, and the chemistry is apparent between you two and the rest of the band. I wanted to talk quickly about your collaboration with Steve Kimmock, Crazy Engine, and his son John Morgan on drums. Maybe just, you know, how the project came about and your relationship with Kimmock previous.
Yeah, well, I knew Kimmock. I've done some side work when they re-coordinated Zero. I was not in the original Zero, but they would come and put it back together. I guess the original keyboard player was pretty solid in a daytime job, so they would call me to come in and do a few days with Zero. And I guess, you know, Steve was another one that kind of go through a few musicians from time to time, and, you know, he needed an organ player, and I guess my name was kind of bouncing around. A lot of folks seem to like what I do, and so he likes to pick key guys that, you know, that kind of got a name of their own and that can hold up the banner on their own, you know. So we got together and, you know, and did a little bit of playing. And before I knew it, it was Crazy Engine. It wasn't really meant to be there. It was just more going on the road and doing Steve Kimmock fans and promoters, and a lot of the fans liked the fact of me playing with Steve, and they just liked that idea. And so he tried to make it, you know, a band. At that time, John was around and staying at the house, just kind of fresh out of high school and still staying with his father, and quite a drummer, you know. And so we were doing some rehearsing, and there he was. And same thing with a couple of female lady bass players. I think her name was Janice, was a friend of John Morgan, and so it just kind of happened, you know. We went out and just did some gigs. And I must say, Steve is definitely one of my favorite guitar players.
Yeah, he's fantastic. All the projects I've seen him with, he continues to wow me on a regular basis. So I really think, Melvin, that's all the questions I have for you, aside from the ones that you answered in your answers that I asked. So really wanted to thank you for your time, especially when you're on the road today. I want to encourage our listeners to attend Shakedown Street, our local Colorado Grateful Dead tribute featuring you on organ and keys tonight at the Boulder Theater. And it looks like tomorrow in Crested Butte. Is that it?
That is correct.
Yes, excellent. And it looks like you're going on a full-scale tour with the Garcia Band in April, May, June, and beyond. So I want to encourage all our listeners to support you on the road and live music. And thank you so much for your time. You really are a personal hero of mine and of Grateful Webs. The music you played with Garcia is invaluable. And thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course, and we will go ahead and link all the info to the interviews to you and April so you can check them out. And in the meanwhile, drive safe, and I will see you soon at one of your shows and come up and introduce myself.
Please do. I'd love to meet you in person.
Great. Thanks, Melvin. It's been a pleasure. Take care, okay?
Bye-bye now.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.